Hello, everybody. Good morning. This is Justin and Lizzie for Turning Towards Life. This is our first episode since I have given birth to the most extraordinary little girl. And it's a miracle that I'm here. I've just left her asleep by some miracle. She may wake up and we might need to do something different. I don't know. But we are winging it as usual, and therefore, who knows what's going to happen? So it's just part of this whole deal is that we're in our lives, and who knows what's going to happen. So I'm thrilled to be here and surprised to be here, and also taking a risk by being here because I don't know what's going to happen. And Matthew, my husband, is currently. Just as I came down, he said, "Well, what if she wakes up and starts screaming?" And I said, "Well, we're just going to have to do something because she might still be hungry because she hasn't fully had her fill of food this morning. So she's had a little bit though, and it might keep her going for our half an hour today. So I'm really happy to be here and happy to be bringing this sauce that Justin has brought us by Seth around the lovely pair of children. So." I'm very glad to be here and thank you everybody also for your amazingly generous well wishes and congratulations on my girl. It is quite the ride. And anyone out there who's listening, who's given birth, knows the ride of it all. And it is quite extraordinary. And I don't know, maybe sometime we can have a conversation specifically about that, Justin, and I don't know what that might be. But there's so much to process and so much to look at, and it's just a huge, lovely, incredible, hard, excellent thing. So I'm here and still processing what's going on, and still completely bowled over by the whole thing, and completely in love with Vesper, and completely taken out by her in all kinds of ways because I love her so much and. We are right in the kerfuffles of new parenthood, and we are okay and we're sane and we're practicing what we practice, which is asking for help and being vulnerable and doing our very best to respond, really, is all that's happening. And so far, there's lots of emotion and lots of everything. Lots of nappies and lots of sleeplessness and joy and wonder and miraculousness and tears and not knowing and it's extraordinary. So I'm just happy to be in this and happy to be ready to receive whatever the gifts of this little passage that Seth has written has for us. And I think it has lots in it for me right now around everything that's going on. So Justin, thank you for bringing this and maybe you can say a little bit about how come you brought this
Well, I'm
time.
going to say a few things. Lizzie, the first thing I'm going to say is I was wrong when I said to you earlier that your microphone is sorted. You are still quite quiet.
Okay, so if I go like this, is
That's
a bit
much
better?
better. Yeah, that's much better. I think everyone will be able to hear you though, because otherwise the difference between our volumes will be a lot. Well, I just want to say to everyone how completely thrilled I am feeling, because this is actually the first time that I've seen you, Lizzie, since Vesper was born. Although we've had various kinds of contact, and I always feel very deeply in contact with you, we haven't spoken, or and I haven't seen your face. So this is true for everyone else. This is true for me, as if for everyone else. It's just the who's with us, particularly for those of you who are able to see us because you're with us live, or you watch us on YouTube afterwards. I'm feeling totally bowled over with joy to see you and to be in this conversation. Thrilling. And before we even get to the source, and I think we will have to circle round back to this and find ourselves a source that will also support us. I'm just marveling at how much we can love, that we can love a new being who before a few days ago wasn't in the world, wasn't really there yet to love. And then suddenly there's a person, and it's possible to find ourselves overwhelmed by and filled by a love that we hadn't known before is just suddenly there. It's the most extraordinary thing that we humans do. So I'm feeling very joyful at feeling my part of loving Vespa, who I haven't met yet, as well, just through seeing you. Yeah. It's glorious and gorgeous.
I'm pretty sure that it doesn't take very much to love her, if you know what I mean.
Right.
I feel like, yeah, there's a way that she is that, yeah, everyone who meets her, it feels this to me. She's just an incredible person. And so when I think of and feel of you meeting her, it's obvious that you already love her.
Of course I already do. Mm. And that's, I think, is one of the most amazing things about being a human, is that that's possible.
Yeah.
And if we could remember that, if we could remember that with other people, not just delicious newborns, who are born of people that we care about,
yeah.
not just then, but because it's really true of all of us. And I think that's a big part of what we've been doing here, Lizzie, has been finding a way of tapping into that possibility. So I'm feeling that very strongly this morning. I want to just make a little announcement before we do anything else, which is that later this month, on the 23rd and 24th of November, I am again teaching our Foundations of Coaching program in London. So this is the 23rd and 24th of November 2019, if you're listening to this in a suitable time frame. If you'd like to join us, it would be so glorious to see you, and you can find all the details at wearethirdspace.org. And I'm very mindful that people might be listening at another time, because I met someone this week, Lizzie, I haven't told you this, who is with us for Turning Towards Life, but she's starting right at the very beginning.
Oh, wow.
Listening through to every episode in order, so it's going to take her a while to get to that announcement. But really, really, we have met so many wonderful people who've come to things because we've talked about them here. So it's in London, it's later in November, and be fantastic if you want to join us. Contact us on our Facebook group as well. And then the other thing I wanted to say before we get to this source is just to say thank you to Seth Godin, who this came from, because you'll know this, Lizzie, but Turning Towards Life, of course, got born from the two of us, but the seeds of it, for me, were planted from an experience learning with Seth that I was involved in a couple of years ago. And he encouraged participants in the program that I was in to get going with getting things into the world. And it was because of that that we began Turning Towards Life, with no real sense of what it might become, just the commitment to begin and to continue, which we've continued. So it's very lovely to be able to bring something that's from him into this. So this is from Seth's blog. He's a person who writes and publishes every day. You can go and check him out at Seth Godin. He has amazing things to write about and say. And it's called The Anatomy of Annoying. And it goes like this. The Anatomy of Annoying. Pema Chodron's story has stuck with me for a decade. At a meditation retreat, the guy sitting next to her, near her, kept making an annoying clicking sound. Again and again, she was jolted from her practice because he kept clicking his tongue. During the break, as she gathered up her courage to tell him that he was ruining the day for her and for everyone else, she realized that in fact, it was a nearby radiator that was causing the clicking. Suddenly, the fact that it was an inanimate object changed everything for her. It wasn't about her any longer. It wasn't intentional or selfish. It was simply a radiator. And the rest of the day was fine because it was simply a radiator. My biggest takeaway is that the key leap wasn't in discovering that the sounds came from a radiator. The lesson is that acting like it comes from a radiator completely solves the problem. Sometimes, often, usually, it's not about us. It's simply weather.
Pema Chodron's story has stuck with me for a decade. At a meditation retreat, the guy sitting near her kept making an annoying clicking sound. Again and again, she was jolted from her practice because he kept clicking his tongue. During the break, as she gathered up her courage to tell him that he was ruining the day for her and for everyone else, she realized that in fact, it was a nearby radiator that was causing the clicking. Suddenly, the fact that it was an inanimate object changed everything for her. It wasn't about her any longer. It wasn't intentional or selfish. It was simply a radiator. The rest of the day was fine because it was simply a radiator. My biggest takeaway is that the key leap wasn't in discovering that the sounds came from a radiator. The lesson is like acting it comes from a radiator completely solves the problem. Sometimes, often, usually, it's not about us. It's simply weather.
I've been thinking about this so much since I first saw it. And the thing that immediately strikes me to say is, in a way, the obvious bit is when you find out that it's a radiator and not a person. And I think we might have to talk about why is it that that's so freeing? Now, how come? It's exactly the same sound, but that it's coming from a radiator that doesn't have any intention and that you can't stop it. So it changes everything about how we relate to it. So that's one part of it that's on my mind, Lizzie. But the other part that's on my mind is you can really apply this to just about anything and see what happens. So even when somebody else is apparently doing something that is directed at me, one of the things that I'm learning is very often it's not nearly as directed as me as I imagine it is. Like, it's so easy to imagine. I think it must be a sort of shame thing. Well, if it's all about me, if you're cross with me, I need to be indignant and self-righteous and everything. And if I can just relax and go, well, maybe this is a bit more like a radiator. Like, it might have something to do with me, but it's not all to do with me. So we can apply the same rule to something that comes from someone else. But the bit that I really wanted to get to is I'm also starting to see how I can apply the same thing to myself. So when I get caught in a sort of a shame loop that I don't know what happened yesterday, I was driving somewhere and I realized I'd forgotten my keys. I'd left them at home. And then I was cross with myself for having lost my keys. And then I was ashamed for being someone who would lose my keys. And then I was cross and irritated at feeling cross. And I could see how this whole tiny thing could escalate into a giant thing because I left my keys at home and it really mattered. But there was a way in which I could also very fruitfully treat that like a radiator as well and go, hey, you know, it's lost keys. Not I lost the keys and now I have to beat myself up forever about my lost keys and beat myself up about my beating myself up. To even treat my own internal processes that way, without, of course, giving up learning from them. Like, I could put my keys somewhere more useful next time, and maybe I would, you know, wouldn't lose them. But anyway, what I'm trying to see if I can get to is how this applies. Even there's a way in which this applies even to what's most intimate, to what's closest in that feels most. Most like the things that I should get really, really worked up about.
Yeah, for me, it's about whoever's involved. It paints the possibility of depersonalization of things. So the fact that it's not a person doing the clicking, but it's a radiator doing the clicking, and that possibility is planted with this little story, feels to me like it really relates to blame, like blaming others for my experience of something. Like, if it's you doing the clicking, I can blame you for how I feel now, which is irritated and annoyed and tense in my body, for example. But when it's a radiator, I can't blame the radiator. And therefore, what is it to be like in its lost keys? rather than I've lost the keys. Like it's a different experience to see there is something spilled on the side versus you spilled that. Like it's a whole different way of paying attention to what's happening. And when I was reflecting on this as well, I can feel all the ways that I skip to, well, you did this, whether it's me or someone else or whatever. And why it applies at the moment is because obviously taking care of a tiny baby, there's all kinds of ways we could be blaming each other for when she's crying or when the nappy's not put on properly or whatever kerfuffle we're in. But there's also a way of relating to it, which is like it's a radiator-ness or a keys-ness, which is there's a nappy that's not on right and there's a baby crying. But it's not attributable to anyone's intentions or good intentions or bad intentions or anything. It's weather. It's what's happening right now and how do we respond. And I feel like if I'm responding all the time from the place of who's done what and which person am I looking at to assign the responsibility to for this, it really removes my capacity to respond to her. Actually nodding to her then, responding to my judgment on someone else, which actually is not producing contact between me and the thing that's most important, which is the response to this little tiny baby who I love. And so it's a really beautiful, timely inquiry to be wondering about all of the ways that I involve myself and others in actually creating a massive distraction from my capacity to be with what's arising. It's a huge diversion. And maybe if I found a way of orienting myself to what's actually happening rather than who did what and who's doing what, I could process whatever that discomfort was with whatever was happening with the clicking noise in a very different way than deflecting from me onto someone else. And I think it's just one of these human dynamics that we do. It's like it's so much easier for me to tell you off for doing something than to tolerate and to be with and to process my physical experience, my felt experience of what's occurring. And that for me is the central inquiry with Pema Chodron's experience here, is like, where am I skipping out of processing my own experience by putting it all onto you and having an argument with you because you shouldn't have clicked your tongue like that, versus, well, I'm having an experience of something. Can I be in that experience? Can I process that? Can I have that rather than try and get away from it?
That's so beautifully said, Lizzie. And I'm very much appreciating your language of contact, because it's helping me to see that there are some really subtle and important distinctions about what's going on here, that when we can see them can really help us. So what you said was that our blame, the primary function of our blame in a way is that it's a distraction. It enables us not to be in contact with something. So one thing it struck me that it enables us not to be in contact with is the situation itself. You know, like, I loved what you were saying, there's a baby with a nappy that's not on right. So one way, who's crying, one way we can do it is we can blame someone. I can blame myself, or I can blame the other person who's involved, or I can blame the person who's clicking their tongue all the way through the meditation session. And it takes us right away from the situation at hand. So it's a turning away as opposed to a turning towards. And I'm really with you that the dignified, creative, loving, human, powerful thing to do is to get ourselves in contact with the situation. Baby with nappy not on properly, how might I respond? Or clicking sound that can't be changed, how might I respond? Because not everything can be changed. So it is contactfulness with, which is really a kind of presence. You know, the definition of presence that I'm finding most helpful is that presence is really a kind of intimacy with things, contactfulness with things. So we it's a way that we withdraw from presence. So then the other thing I'm thinking as you're talking about it is that I think maybe what happens is that when we feel blame, which is really a kind of rage, it's like you did something and I'm going to get my, rather than dealing with or learning to live with the situation, I'm going to shake it out of you. Is that rage is, and see what you think about this, rage is one of the things that we feel when we feel wounded, but don't feel like we have the capacity to deal with our feeling of being wounded. And so often what's happening in such a simple situation is, at least in my experience, what I'm getting in contact with is a sort of like a primary wound, an early experience of not being seen. And when I don't feel seen, particularly if it involves someone else, you didn't bring me a cup of tea at exactly the right moment, or you didn't remember it was my birthday, or you didn't, you know, whatever it is. You don't know that I need it quiet in the meditation hall. I think, at least in my experience, what I can see is that it very, very quickly taps in to what it feels like to be very small and to be unseen, or to be very small and to be judged or something. And so the place from which this blame is coming from is a very young place, not with adult capacities for openness and care and responsiveness. And so right in the midst of something tiny, like a nappy knot on and a wailing baby and someone to blame, or, here's the one that gets me. People put things in the dishwasher, but they put them in such a way that I'm now going to have to reorganize them so the dishes get clean. Oh, you know, but it's really not about the dishes. It's about, for me, it's about you didn't see me. Who would dare to load the dishwasher in a way that didn't take into account that I might have to rearrange it? And because I didn't get seen, I feel wounded. And because I'm wounded, I'm rageful. And because I'm rageful, I'll blame you, rather than just, the dishes are in the dishwasher. Somebody didn't put them in the right way. Big deal. So what I'm trying to do in saying all of this is to say, on the one hand, I really appreciate both Seth and Pema's observation that the solution, the response to it is really simple, is it's weather, it's not personal. And once we can start to do that, so many of our difficulties go away. But I'm also interested as to why we do it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And also, Justin, as you're speaking, it really strikes me as well. And actually, I was having a conversation with my mum about this yesterday, that what I notice about myself and other people is that the degree to which I blame people, the way I blame people for things, has zero distinction between the way I'm doing it to them and the way I'm doing it to myself. So the way I blame myself or give myself a hard time for certain things is exactly the way I treat other people when something goes wrong. So the really empowering thing is here is that when I notice I'm blaming someone, I can track my own self-blame, and I can see much more clearly then, because someone's helping me see it, because they're separate from me, seemingly separate from me, and I'm there and I'm here. When I'm blaming someone else, I can identify the ways that I'm giving myself a hard time all the time. And so the other side of that is that when somebody's blaming me, I can see that it's probably much more about an insight into the way that they're speaking to themselves in their heads when something goes wrong, or they drop something, or they mess something up or something goes wrong than it is about what I've done. And so on the kind of the other side of the relationship, if you like, it really helps me to understand the kind of thing that I'm receiving so that I don't take it personally, that I can see that this is a way that if they had done what I had done, this is how they'd be treating themselves. And so it really helps to understand the dynamics of this thing, because it shows me my way of treating myself when I do it to other people, but it also shows me the pain that's coming from, you know, if you were cross with me for the way I loaded the dishwasher, it would show me just how much you mistreat yourself if you misload the dishwasher or any other comparable thing. And I find that really helpful as well. Like, I don't have to go into collapse. I don't have to go into shame. I don't have to go into feeling like horribly judged. If I can also have contact with the fact that this isn't just about me doing something, this is about you also treating yourself in a really mean way that I'm now on the end of, but actually it shows me to have compassion with you because you're doing something to yourself, otherwise you wouldn't be doing it to me. Like, you wouldn't know how to do that. So it's got like this other part of it too, which I find really helpful, so that it doesn't perpetuate the cycle of you blame me, I collapse, and I apologize, and then we have it's like it's something else, and the tennis match of blaming each other for things. Which, yes, I really appreciate about this invitation, because it allows me to respond in exactly the way they're saying to you, which is there is something happening that needs to be responded to that's not about me. It's not about my hurt because of what you've said to me. It might be in part, but also there's another big thing happening, which is there's a person who is really upset in front of me here. How can I respond to them, not to the thing coming at me from them, which is most likely going to pass, and it's not really what they intend, really, really. It's a trigger, it's a wound, like you're saying. And because it's a wound, how can I respond that's compassionate, and how can I respond that's respectful, and not just get into the tennis match of, well, you did this last time. And I know I do that, and Matthew will testify to this, is that he'll blame me and I'll go, well, you did it once, you know. How can I not just jump into that cycle every time of trying to be equally blaming, so that we're all equal on the blame front, and, well, you did it, and therefore, you know, it's like, how do I step somewhere deeper and go, well, I realize you must be treating yourself really harshly to say that, so can I find the place where I feel for you, and I can respond to you and not get in the same ridiculous dance of, well, you did that, well, you did that, well, you did that nappy this way, and I did that nappy this way. You know, it's and, you know, when sleeplessness is here and we're tired and don't know what we're doing, it's an excellent battleground, possibly. And thankfully we're not battling, and I can completely see the path to battle if we wanted it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Like, and yeah, and I, you know, I feel so grateful for all of our work that we're doing, Justin, because I think having a little one depending on us, you know, it's a kerfuffle just like anyone else's kerfuffle. And I feel so resourced and have so much at my fingertips that I can reference and that I can refer to in my development and all the conversations we have and all the work that we do, that I just feel seriously grateful for the learning that we're open to and the learning that we're doing in things like this that are other people's articulations of what we're learning as human beings. Honestly, I feel so blessed and lucky to have all of it available, and obviously be completely also feeling like a massive beginner in everything because of what's happening as well.
I want to pick up before we end on this brilliant thing that you said and take it one step further. So you said, when somebody is treating us in a blaming way, one of the very helpful things to do is to see that the way that they're speaking is quite probably an expression of how they're treating themselves. And when we see that, we can let go and we can say, so something's happening and someone's hurting. What can I do? And it struck me as you were saying it, Lizzie, that what makes being human so wonderful and so difficult is it's like we're in a hall of mirrors all the time. Because there's the person who's blaming me and how they're treating themselves, but what I'm reacting to is not even often what they're saying, it's how I'm now treating myself in the light of what's being said to me. So now I'm to blame and now I have to. So to start to see that my own reactiveness is very often a reactivity to my own inner something. So the move that's really helpful to make is first of all to go, I can see that you're hurting and that this is how you're talking to yourself. So I love that. And then, but then I think the thing we need to do, and this is what I was trying to get to and what I said right at the start, is to see that our own inner attack that happens is to treat that in exactly the same way, as to be able to say, there is a part of me that is very hurt and very tender and very small and is really hurting because of how wounded and raw and vulnerable that part feels right now, whilst someone's, you know, criticizing me for whatever it is. So as well as treating them like they're hurting, the other kind thing to do is to say, it's to treat myself like I'm hurting and to go, there's hurting. What can I do? How can I help? So even treating our own inner dynamics in a bit more like the radiator, which funnily enough is not to treat our inner dynamics like an inanimate object, it's actually to care very deeply, it's to go, look, something's happening. There is hurt here. Because without that, what we do is we spin off in the other direction that you said, which is away from our contactfulness and into our rage. And it's a giant escalating attempt to protect ourselves, but it turns into a giant escalating into penetrating sort of attack. So I'm curious as we end this about what it might be like to treat everything like it was a radiator, not by way of detachment in a way, but by way of contact. Yeah. It's a wonderful thought, and it's particularly brilliant for any of us who do have young people who live with us, whether babies or teenagers, which is my world, to see what we can do to keep on practicing this. What a joy it is to do this with you, Lizzie. Thank you.
Completely lovely.
It's a real treat to be in a real conversation between you and I, and to feel all the gifts that come from that, and at the same time to be able to share it with so many people. And a whole bunch of people joined our Facebook group this week, so I want to say welcome to all of you who chose to come along for the ride, and everyone who's on the podcast and all of that. Thank you.
Well, thank you everybody, and thank you for having me in the unpredictability of this. We've still got some in the bag in case it all becomes impossible again. Some recordings that we've done, but I just want to say thank you for being with this and all of your generosity. It's so very beautiful, and we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. Bye everyone.
Bye.